Leaders behind the news on Radio Ghana, and as usual, we encourage you to send in your comments and concerns and questions. We'll try to find answers to them for you. And our test line is 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we are linking up with all our regional FM stations. We want to move on to our first story. The issue of illegal mining continues to be a problem for people in mineral-rich areas. After the recent floods and pass of the eastern region, there was a crescendo of voices on the issue. As if the woes of the people is not enough, the Ghana Water Company Limited has shut down its Chebbi plant because the Brim River that feeds it has become too polluted to be treated for both domestic use and drinking. In the latest developments, the people of Yayasu in the Brim North district of the eastern region are keeping a vigil to prevent Newmont Mining Company from exhuming the bodies of their dead relatives and taking over their cemetery to serve as dumping site for the company's mine waste. John Appington is a resident of Yayasu and is on the line to give us an update as we try to explore what is really happening and what Newmont is doing. John, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah.
Hello, John.
Hello.
Yes, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, the whole issue was last year we wrote a letter to this Minister of Mines and Energy, this Honorable Collins Dauda, about this relocation of Yayasu to Adelsna, that we will not go to Adelsna to relocate us at Adelsna. And as up to now, we haven't heard anything from the minister. And then, since about 3 weeks ago, this Adelsna chief, Nana Budi Aba Nkron, came to Yayasu and said he's coming to remove our cemetery, our fourth father's cemetery, to Adelsna. Since even where they wanted us to relocate us at Adelsna, even they have not started anything there as of now. Then the chief came, he said he wanted to come and remove our fourth father's cemetery to Adelsna. Then he said, how? Since they have not even started anything there, why is he saying that he's coming to remove our fourth father's cemetery to Adelsna? So, you were there, he came with armed soldiers, six armed soldiers from New Abrim to come and force us to go and perform a customary thing so that he can come and remove the cemetery to Adelsna. So, in fact, as at now, they tried and they couldn't even penetrate to the cemetery. So even as at now, we are there watching the cemetery as at now.
So it means you have a number of people. About how many are there at the moment?
Are the cemetery there?
Yes.
Are you talking of those?
Those guarding the cemetery.
We the youth of Yayasu, we are guarding the cemetery up to now. Even we had that even is going to bring the reinforcement from the Achiasi to come and force us to go and perform that customer leasing so that he can come and remove the cemetery to Adelsna.
Yeah.
We don't even understand why this chief of Adelsna is doing this.
Okay. John, let me just ask. You said Adelsna has not been prepared for reinterment of your dead relatives. Does that mean that if the place has been prepared, you are also ready to move?
We are not ready to move as of now because what the chief has done, we just don't understand. We can't go and stay with that chief over there. We can't go and stay with that chief over there.
Yeah, but what is
your... We haven't heard of this before.
Uh-huh. What is your chief saying?
Yeah, we don't have chief here. We have the Queen Mother and the Ebusuafeni.
And what are they saying?
When we went through this situation, the Ebusuafeni is saying that even you don't know anything about this situation. So, we have got to know that the Queen Mother has maneuvered with that chief of Adelsna doing this without the notice of the Ebusuafeni.
So, it means you've not been informed as people of Yayasu at all. That is what you are saying until now.
We have been informed. We have heard of the chief has gone to the this Newmont company, collect a huge amount from the company that is going to perform this customer business without the knowledge of the IASU people.
Okay. Mr. Abington, please hold on for us. We'll come to you quickly. But Newmont is the company that is involved here, and we have their representative. Udruma Fokwasin is the external relations manager, Newmont Achim Projects. He's on the line. Thank you so much, sir, for your time.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Yes, you heard John Appenton, resident of IASU, on their present issue. What is the side of Newmont?
Kingsley, let me take this opportunity to thank you, and also to thank my brother Appenton for openly agreeing to discuss these issues. We have always encouraged open dialogue and on the Achim project and its impact, both positive and negative. The discussions on the Achim project started way back in 2004, and because at that time the environmental statement had not yet been approved, it was difficult coming out clearly to point out, look, this community or these hamlets are going to be resettled, until 2008, when the environmental impact statement was approved by the Ghana Environmental Protection Agency. And then both at the 2004 and 2005 and 2008 public hearings, that was actually organized at the IASU community football field, it was made clear that the configuration of the mine and looking at the mine plan as it exists and as it's going to be probably approved, there's a possibility of resettling a community like IASU and certain isolated hamlets within the mine area. And what is requiring that kind of resettlement is because of its proximity to the mine. And as a result of that, we've constantly engaged the communities. We set up a compensation negotiation committee which had representatives from IASU. We went through all the discussions on crop compensation, immovable property compensation, land use deprivation compensation, and the total resettlement package. My brother, these are the processes that we've gone through in coming up with a resettlement site that is on the same stool land on which the IASU people are currently staying. So it's not like we are moving them from one stool land to another stool land. Currently, they are on a additional stool land, and we are resettling them on a additional stool land. As I speak, we've now concluded with building of the resettlement site. We are just halfway through the building of the houses. We have about 24 houses currently at the roofing stage and some of them finishing up. We are going to build about 230 houses. Not until all the houses have been built and facilities that make up a community is established, the people of IASU will not be moved.
So have you made any move to even exhume dead bodies for transfer, if we have to describe it that way?
No, my brother, like Appenton, my brother Appenton mentioned, the company gone there to go and move, assume anybody. Nobody has gone there to do that. What happened is that looking at the proximity of the cemetery to the mine, discussions are ongoing among the traditional authorities because they are the custodians of our customs and traditions. And they decide on how best to maintain and sustain dignity and sanctity of our dead. So it is based on their advice, after engagement and consultations have concluded, before a decision can be made on how best do we do this in a manner that is dignified of the dead and that is also culturally and traditionally acceptable to our people.
Okay, Mr. Droma, for question, let me quickly go to Ms. Appenton in this case. Ms. Appenton, you heard the external relations manager on the issue that they have tried some engagement to start with. How were you involved? Does that mean perhaps you were not brought in properly?
Yeah. So is that by saying that the company has not been paid any amount to the additional chief to come and perform a customary business to come and remove our cemetery to Adesna? Is he saying that money has not been paid to Adesna chief? Is he saying that? You don't know anything about that?
Yeah. From the questions you are raising, it appears the talk has been going on with those who are supposed to lead the traditional area. So does that mean you've not been called by even your queen mother and others to inform you that this is the situation? It is still under discussion?
The queen mother is under the Ebusuapeni over there. Now Ebusuapeni is saying that you don't know anything about this matter. So if Ebusuapeni is not knowing anything about this matter, so what is that? Queen mother cannot wake up and then go and negotiate with the Adesina chief without Ebusuapeni. That is what we are saying. So there's something going on over there.
Yeah. So Mr. Appentin, asking the questions further, assuming Newmont is coming to you directly and also saying that this is the situation, they are still discussing with you, what will be your next step then?
Yeah, we are telling them that since from the meeting, they told us we are going to relocate as Adesina. And the community, we are saying that we don't like Adesina. We like Afosu. That they chose two places for us. We, the community, chose Afosu. And they are forcefully, they want to force us to go to Adesina. Ask the man whether you don't know that Adesina is going to be affected. Adesina is also affected area. So why are you going to locate us at Adesina? Why in future Adesina will also be affected?
Okay, just hold on. Let me go to him quickly to respond to the concerns you've just expressed. So Droma Fukwatin, they are saying that they had two options, but you are opting for the option they didn't go in for.
Yeah, Kingsley, my brother Penton mentioned that Adesina is also going to be possibly resettled in future. So why are we moving them to Adesina? Let me assure my brother that Adesina is not and will never be resettled. Okay, and as he himself mentioned that the current queen mother, that is the traditional leadership of Aso, reports to the Adesina chief through the Ebusuapeni. So it means, it presupposes that Yayaso currently sits on Adesina's two land. Now, the EPA regulations makes it clear that if you want to go into resettlement, you must try as much as possible as a first option to resettle the people on the two land on which they are staying until and unless all considered issues proves otherwise. You cannot resettle them on another two land. You understand?
So it means their option is on a different two land.
The one Appenton is talking about is on a different two land. Afosu is an Afosu two land, which is a separate two land, which you cross over through Abrim's two land before you go to Afosu's two land. Currently, they are on Adesina's two land. And that is why I continue to encourage my brother and the rest of the youth in Adesina and everybody involved, that look, let's continue to discuss these issues openly so that we can come up with an amicable solution, a solution that will be acceptable to everybody that is involved in this situation. As we speak, most of the youth and the households that we are going to resettle, people have gone through the choice of their houses, they've gone through the choices of the site on which they are going to settle, and majority of them are going through the process. People have agreed on the house designs, house types, painting that they require. So if my brother is saying that people don't want to go to Adesina, yes, of course, you might have some isolated cases of people who would have preferred that they resettle on either Abrim or another place.
But won't you try to even explore that option if that is what they want and that is what will bring some peace?
The options are always open. We've made it clear that, look, it becomes administratively impossible to try and relocate or resettle a single community on two separate two lands. What the option says is that if you don't opt out resettlement, you can go for relocation, and by relocation, your domain and everything is valued, and then money is given to you, and then you can take that money to go and build the house of your choice.
So about
two land.
Yeah, about how many households have gone to inspect and even make their choices of houses and even the type of paint to use or what color and all?
I cannot give you exact figure, but Kingsley, I can assure you that majority of the Yasu people have gone through this process.
Please hold on. Let me go to Sapintin in this case. Sapintin.
Yeah.
From what we hear from Odro Kwatin, it means there are still options left for you. What do you want them to do now?
Mother, if you can come here yourself to come and see what is going over here, I would like it. The man is saying that Yasu people are willing to go to Adesina. It's never true. It's never true. Come here and come and see what is going on over here. The man is saying that we are in Adesina's true land. Our forefathers were here about 130 years ago. Now, this man is telling us that we are in Adesina's true land. So if we are going to be relocated, we cannot choose where we like. Is that what the mining law is saying?
What's happened saying?
Is that what the mining law is saying, that if you are in somebody's true land, you cannot choose what you like?
Ms. Abington.
Yeah.
He just mentioned that you still have the chance to opt for Afusu if that is where you want, but you must come and then talk to them, or perhaps...
let me cut you. But now what the chief has done, now we are not moving an inch to anywhere, because we have not heard of this before, that where even they are going to relocate us has not even been started. Why the chief will come out and say that he's come to remove our forefathers to that side? We just don't understand what has even happened. So we are not moving an inch. If Newmont Company cannot do their work, they have to stop.
Okay.
Of what they are doing.
It's happening.
We are not moving an inch.
Okay. Please hold on quickly. We'll go to Ms. Odro Mafukwati and perhaps we'll come and pick your last comment on this. This is their resolution now. It appears that there is a stalemate with the communication from the chief of Adesina and even their leaders there, because they are saying the Ebusuapeni is not aware, even though the Queen Mother is also leading the process. What do you do now?
There's no issue without a solution. What all of us need to do is to take a step back and continue to sit at the round table to discuss this issue. And I think my brother Appenton mentioned that Newmont must take up the challenge and do its work. So we are going to take it up, and we are going to call in the opinion leaders, the paramountcy, the traditional leaders, the youth groups, who will sit down at the round table. And I think at the end of the day, as the standing has prevailed throughout this period of our coexistence, and as we continue to build on this relationship, some challenges will come up. But I think at the end of the day, if we are able to cross over some of these challenges for a solution that is mutually acceptable and beneficial to all stakeholders, and that is what we are going to go for.
Okay. Mr. Appenton, so will you be willing to talk to them if they are coming to you directly now?
Oh, they are welcome. They are welcome.
Okay. We want to thank you very much. But, Ms. Odro Mafukwati, before you go, the other environmental concerns with mining, have you taken care of them even as you try to go in there?
Yeah. Like I mentioned, in 2008, our environmental impact statement, which spells out the potential impact of the mine and the mitigation measures that are being put in place, was submitted to the Environmental Protection Agency and was approved. And you come up with your environmental management plan, which also goes through the process and approved. And we are much assured that, looking at how our operations have gone so far in Ahafo and the lessons we've learned in progressing on our operations in Ghana, a lot is going to be achieved in Achim. But hey, sometimes some of these things you can't predict, but when they come up, it is the willingness of the company to proactively deal with the issues and put in place measures to forestall its reoccurrence in future. I think that is what is important for all of us.
Okay. We'll still be monitoring developments here, and if need be, we'll get back to you. But for now, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Behind the News tonight.
Yeah, I also thank you for this opportunity, and I thank my brother Appenton and the rest of the ASO people for opening up this discussion, and we all will continue to engage with each other. And look, the relationship that is existing between us will continue to prevail even after overcoming some of these challenges.
Thank you very much. Odroma Fokwatin is the External Relations Manager, Newmont Achim Projects, on the issue in Yaya. So John Appington is a resident and joined us earlier. You heard the voice. But what is the Minerals Commission saying about the development? We have Ben Ayi, CEO of the Commission, on the line presently. Thank you so much for your time this evening, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you had full briefing on developments, latest developments in Yayaso?
I wouldn't say I have full briefing on the situation on the ground, because I've not been there myself and my officer is here to visit the ground. However, one needs to know that along with the permitting of mineral rights, it is the permitting of environmental impact as well. So I believe that in the discussions, you did hear that the Environmental Protection Authority has held public hearings in the area and has also indicated what needs to be done to manage various impacts. In fact, in the past, the Environmental Protection Authority refused to grant a permit because there were some impacts which it required that should be varied before it would do that, and those were done. When it comes to resettlement issues, the law requires that all stakeholders should be involved in the discussion to ensure that consensus is reached. And I believe at this moment, as far as I know, the discussions are still ongoing. So I was a bit surprised this morning when I saw in the news that Newmont wants to exhume dead royals and so on. I got in touch with the company to find out what is happening. And they told me, as far as they know, it's more discussions between the two traditional areas that has led to some misunderstandings. And they are not involved because they are waiting for the relevant committees to finish their work, reach consensus, and then their report will inform what the company can do and so on under the supervision of the EPA. So that's how far I'm told they have gone.
So with the present situation and the two parties we had earlier agreeing to talk, how do you go in to facilitate the process?
Both regulators, that is EPA and ourselves, will get involved. I'm expecting a report, a full report from Newmont tomorrow morning. Once I see the report, I'll get my officers to start dialogue with the parties involved, along with EPA. And we have had a few instances like this where there is disagreement, usually due to some misunderstanding. And so once we bring the parties together, hear all sides, it enables us to suggest a way forward. And then gradually we get to resolve it. Of course, this is not done by force. It is more by negotiation and dialogue to ensure that all parties on the same wavelength.
Mr. Ben Ayi, want to thank you very much for sharing exactly what you have with us at the moment. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Mr. Ben Ayi is the CEO of Minerals Commission and updating us on what they've got. But Prince Akra is the General Secretary of the Ghana Mine Workers Union. And we just want to ask, where there is a problem like this, how do they go in as an association, and what is their stand on the present development? Thank you so much, Prince, for your time this evening.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
If you can please go down the volume of your set for us, we are getting the feedback here. Yes. Thank you. It's behind the news on Radio Ghana, reaching you in all parts of the country. Yes, Mr. Prince Akra, what is your present stand on the development? How do you go in as an association?
Yeah, as a trading organization, we're very mindful of the extent that we have to get in the said debate. But obviously, as a Ghanaian, I want to look at the issue from the perspective of engagement. Precisely, people believe that, look, this is their source of livelihood, and for that matter, any attempt to really put things to an end would extend that they have to struggle to survive.
Ms. Ankara, we can still get a feedback from your set if you can completely move away from it. Yes.
Yeah, people will be very concerned about the extent that they make a living when a business entity will have to just deploy them of that, you know. So engagement becomes the center stage. And I believe that, you know, in any given situation, we need to have like minds to see the extent that beside the law, you know, they'll be able to touch issues. And I think that, like Mr. Ayu rightly said, the regulatory agencies themselves will have to play a mediation role so that they can mutually coexist with the communities. I mean, in recent years, if you want to do business in an environment that you have that sort of acrimonious and adversarial relationship, because people believe that, look, you are there to store their livelihood, obviously they will not take kindly to that. So we rather believe that, you know, whatever the legal trend says, it's just a matter of engaging people eyeball to eyeball, talking to issues and making sure that you build a consensus and some closure on that.
Yeah, but you cited that there were similar instances previously, but why do you think it even comes up where things are supposed to be handled very well?
Yeah, I think that style matter here. You know, I hear, for instance, there's a mine in Konongo, a real mine. I'm really impressed to hear the extent that the community and the employers do coexist. So you've got to ask yourself, what is the style? You know, many a times it all boils down to those who are really at the center stage of the discussions. And this is a very poor country. People's source of livelihood is what sort of, they're going to lose in its entirety. And naturally, they will not be happy about it. So I think that, you know, it's amount to those who are at the center stage of the debate. I think in such major discussions, some kind of emotional stability is very important so that you take on board the bigger picture and begin to ensure that you talk up to the level that people will see you as someone who cares about their future and the extent that, you know, you are not there as an arrogant and ruthless business entity. So I think a lot depends on the style. And I believe that Newmont, for a while, I think that they really learned their lessons when they had this sort of pollutions here and there. I was impressed the way they took the whole process. I mean, by way of paying a compensation, even though when the laws were not very clear about that. So I believe that with a bit of engagement and, you know, making sure that they stay focused, they'll be able to see eye to eye with those folks and eventually see a finality to the whole process. But it's quite a tough issue because it's really people's livelihood, and it's not that easy to really lose your source of livelihood forever, you know. So it's something we need to just mature the necessary emotional stability mindset, you know, to deal with the issue.
Okay. Thank you very much, Prince Ankara, for your time too.
All right, thanks.
That's the General Secretary of the Ghana Mine Workers Union. But when we talk about mining, an organization that has been involved in advocacy on proper mining procedures that takes care of the environment and the people, is WACAM. Daniel Owusu-Cranton is with the organization. Thank you, sir, for joining us on the show this evening.
Thank you, my brother.
Yes, from earlier conversation, it appears there is a consensus going to be reached, at least from what they make us understand. But how best do you think the mining situation should be handled with communities that are settled?
Let me first say that the laws that we have in this country, the laws protect the mining companies and not the sovereign rights of the mining communities. If you look at the Minerals and Mining Act 703, you have a lot of provisions, stability clauses that protect business interests. But you cannot have strong protection of the community rights. And we also don't have what we call no-go zones. That is, we can mine anywhere. So something important, some of the important facilities that we have in this country, forest reserves, protected areas, don't have adequate protection, you know, in the Minerals and Mining Act, and that creates the space for mining companies to do what they are doing.
But what about the law that says that 50 meters within a sacred grove or perhaps a cemetery, there is not supposed to be mining?
Let me indicate, for example, that if we take the 1999 National Land Policy, it does not allow mining in forest reserves. It's a policy. Good. And that is why some of us have been talking about policy contradictions in this country. Now, if we look at what the companies have always been saying, that some parts of production forest reserves can be mined. The history of it is that many mining companies found their way into the production forest reserves, which it is only logging that could be allowed in production forest reserves. The mining companies entered the forest reserves, started engaging in exploration. There was nothing stopped them, and then at a certain point, they came back to justify the fact that they've spent money to find mineable reserves in the forest reserves, so they should be allowed to mine. And so they did illegal things, and then got, you know, just twisted government's arms and said, we have invested, and that you should allow us to mine in forest reserves. And that was how some, about 2% of production forest reserves, you know, have been committed to mining forest, surface mining, for example. So we do have clear policy guidelines, and even when we have the clear policy guidelines, we violate them with impunity.
Yeah.
And that is what has been creating some of the problems that we have today.
So, you've spoken about the fact that sometimes, because there are corporations that are protected because of their interest and all, and communities are not that protected, what can be done to help empower the community so that they also start advocacy on a larger scale that can also engage the companies on an even keel, even if it might be difficult?
First, we need to have very strong laws. We need to have strong institutions to implement the strong laws. The communities have to be educated to know their rights in the laws. But let me also indicate, in the case of Yayasu, for example, in December 2010, the Yayasu people sent a petition to the Minister for Lands and Natural Resources. It was then Honorable Colin Zander, my very good friend, and complained about the destruction of the royal cemetery, the destruction of the public cemetery, the destruction of other sacred sites. And the minister actually promised to take a very good look at their petition, because they had a very good case. But not too long after that, the minister was changed. So it is not as if that Yayasu people have not done anything. They have complained. And I think that if we take Newmont, for example, Newmont is coming from the U.S. I do not think that Newmont can assume dead bodies or cemeteries that they are going to mine in the U.S. If they cannot do that, why should they be allowed to do that in Ghana? Even if we take the OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises, it says that companies must behave in the same way outside their home countries as they would have behaved when they were operating at home. So there's a certain attitude. I at times find it difficult to say it, but you don't understand whether they look at some of us here because our laws are weak. They look at us as different human beings, and that they can do to us what they can't do in their home country.
So you believe that there should be more engagement so that everybody gets to understand and know what to do when it matters?
But the engagement should be done within a framework of the law.
Okay.
And that is what is lacking now. And we must all understand that it was the IMF and the World Bank that actually developed the framework of the law that we have. So just to pave the way for multinational enterprises to come to the country and rip us off.
Mr. Ozukrantin, we know this issue will not end today, so certainly we'll be coming to the laws and how it protects the citizenry. But we want to thank you very much for helping us with your perspectives too. Daniel Ozukrantin is with WACAM, the advocacy organization on proper mining procedures. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, linking up with all our regional FM stations, and we want to move on to the next story. HIV and AIDS has been around for 30 years. How much can we say that women are getting away from the problem? Well, statistics available on HIV and AIDS indicate that women continue to bear the brunt of the disease. They are the most infected and also have the responsibility to cater for the infected and affected members of the household. In sub-Saharan Africa, it is estimated that 60% of adults living with HIV are women. The situation in Ghana is not different. The 2010 Sentinel Survey and the National HIV Prevalence Report put women's prevalence rate at 57%. Handling these issues is important for an organization like the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa. an international NGO, and they advocate on women and AIDS and other related issues. They are holding an annual stakeholders conference to discuss and present a document that will contribute to the delivery of HIV services in Ghana. Among the challenges confronting the AIDS response are stigma and discrimination against persons living with HIV. Behind the News now finds out from the Vice President of SWA Ghana, LCIA, how the NGO has been dealing with the critical challenges in the area. You are welcome to Behind the News, LC.
Thank you very much.
Can you say that our response towards HIV has been gender sensitive? This time we are talking about women.
Yes, to some extent. Though interventions have been put in place, there are also policies favoring women and all that, but the society is not gender balanced. Women face a lot of discrimination. Women are not, they do not, they are disempowered by some segments of society, especially in the home, especially in communities. And though there are policies, there are interventions to address the issues of women, but these things don't go into the home. When you get to the home, it is the husband and his wife, their parents, their daughters. So the laws seem not to be able to penetrate the homes where the inequalities are being perpetrated, violence against women and all that. So, yes, there are attempts to address issues of women, but then it's limited when it gets close to where women actually are facing the brunt of discrimination, and that is in the home and within the families.
So do you think we have not worked enough on culture and the issues of empowerment that seem to make women more susceptible to HIV?
No, I don't think so. Somebody once said that we give so much reverence to traditional health, to tradition, to culture. It's very difficult to change cultural norms. And that is where we find, like, it seems as if there's a dead end. We've arrived at a dead end. And so for that reason, I say that not much has actually been done.
Yeah.
We are all, if you find women in various, every part of the country, we are all being controlled by specific cultural norms and practices, which we seem to be unable to do something about.
Yeah. You have been relating a lot with women, both in the urban setting and the rural setting. We keep talking about discrimination, and talking earlier to some people, they were saying that the urban setting is gradually presenting a good picture. Do you think it is cutting across the country with the rural setting too?
Can you come again?
We are asking.
That seems better within the urban setting.
Yes. Anti-stigma measures are seemingly working in urban areas. But exactly. What about the rural areas?
No. In the rural areas, no, not at all. And that is why this conference we had today brought in women from rural settings to come and share with us their experiences. And we realized that stigma is still very rife in the rural setting.
Well, what do you continue to do as SWA, because you work with them?
We've realized that we have to do more education. When we had today's sessions, also pointed out the fact that we need to do targeted education. We've done general education, but we need to really identify areas where we need to go into and concentrate our education.
Education. With all the campaigns we are talking about, does that mean it is not reaching the very people it should get to?
Yes, the campaigns reach people who have the TV, televisions, and they have the time to listen. the radio stations, granted that FM radios, everybody, almost all over the country can access FM stations. But it's like you are just listening to something out there. We really need to go and talk face to face with the leaders in communities, with family heads, with men, especially men, and with the women themselves. We need people, positive women. We need them to be, we need to empower them to be able to come out. What's going on? They are experiencing the stigma. They can speak. It can start from there, and then with support from SWA, then we will reach out to the people that matter within the rural setting. And I think that is where we'll be focusing in at, you know, from now on.
You've mentioned the people who should be talking. So please hold on. Let's talk to one right now. She's on the line. We've been doing very well, we keep saying, in reducing the prevalence rate. But what does it mean when it gets to them? Charity Osudanso is the vice president of NAPLAC Ghana, an association of persons living with HIV. Charity, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Yeah, we've mentioned anti-discrimination measures and all. For you, as a person living with HIV, how do you see things working well?
Thank you very much. For me, as a person living with HIV, one of the most challenging is stigmatization, and I think Madam has spoken very well when we talk of stigma and discrimination among outside there, and then among even persons living with HIV. I think it's about time, as Madam said, the person living with HIV has to break the self-stigma. Ourselves, we have to break the self-stigma. And then outside there, there should be more education on stigma and discrimination. When stigma and discrimination, people must be this kind of ignorance among society must be eradicated. They should accept people living with HIV. I mean, for those who knows me very well, as I'm speaking, if they see me, they will not even believe my status if I tell them right now. So it's something that we need to work on it very, very hard. And by using, education, going deep down to the community, to the grassroots, to eradicate stigma and discrimination. Education is the most powerful weapon that I think all of us can use. I break myself stigma through education, and I think it is the best way all of us can use at this very, very moment.
Yeah. You mentioned education, and I want to go back to a question I threw to LC earlier. That is, with all the campaigns, does that mean people turn a deaf ear, or perhaps they don't follow very well what has been spoken about?
It's like people think all the advocacy, all the adverts they've been seeing, they've heard it, they've heard it several times. They heard it all over and all over. I mean, it's always HIV, and it's like we are fed up. But one thing society must know is that HIV is still there. Stigma and discrimination is very, very high in among our family, in the community. And I want to plead with them, although the education has gone on so many times, but yes, so the only way we can eradicate it is education, and they have to accept it. I mean, they have to get this straight into, they should not be so much ignorant that, I mean, a person living with HIV is his or her fault. It's not our fault to contract HIV. That is what they have to know, and that is what they have to understand.
Yeah.
I mean,
but naturally, talking about discrimination and the need for people to have education, I know it will continue to remain a challenge, but it will be worked on. But is that the only problem you are confronted with as a PL?
No, it is not the only challenge we have been confronting with. Actually, it is the major one. When we talk of HIV, it is the major the stigma and discrimination is a major one. The second one is also disclosure of HIV status, that is especially among couples. Couples don't want to disclose their status to their partners, if that the woman doesn't want to or the man doesn't want to, which creates a very, very big challenge for us. Another one is supporting a woman or a woman living with HIV. I mean, let me put it that way, a woman living with HIV. I always say whenever I get the chance is that a woman living with HIV not having the ability to support herself is a very critical issue that we have to look at. If the woman is hungry, she knows that I'm hungry, I'm HIV positive, so what anything I can do to survive, I have to do it. I hope you get me.
Yeah.
Anything I have to do, I have to do it.
Yeah.
I have to do it. So it doesn't, it might not even bother affecting another person or a man to just to survive. So anytime I, as a woman living with HIV and a woman talking on behalf of living with HIV too, I speak on this issue to
of support.
We talk
yes.
about prevention. We should not just look at condoms, but we should look at the supporting
issues. Yes, Charity, please hold on. Let me just ask Elsie how they are supporting, in spite apart from the education they want to embark on or they've been embarking on.
All right.
Yes. How are you supporting, Elsie Aswa?
Oh, Aswa, apart from the education.
Yes.
We have male members of SWA, and when we are discussing gender issues, they are part of the discussion. We try to let them also see the whole HIV issue from the eyes of women, and we also try to understand it from their own perspective. And at some stage, we come to a common agreement that women are still not getting the support that is needed. It's accepted. If a man is HIV positive, oh yeah, you know, men, they can't be faithful, and it's accepted that he can have multiple partners. But for women, no.
We seem to be losing you, but I think the point is very well made. That is, for women, it's a bigger challenge. That is what you are saying. Yeah. Well, because of the quality of your line, we have to leave you. But Charity, coming back to you, access to antiretrovirals has been raised as sometimes one of your concerns. Is that it?
Yes. Access to antiretroviral is also one of our concerns. And as people living with HIV and also vaccine, we always face this challenge of shortage in the system. Now, the problem is, whom are we to talk to? We know very well, as I'm speaking now, there is shortage of antiretroviral. But when we speak right now, they will tell you it is not. Now, what to me, I will analyze it from this from one point. We get, 4 months or 3 or whatever months the patients or our clients request for when he or she visits the hospital. Now, recently, they don't get their normal 4, 3, 2 months. They get 2 weeks, 1 month. It's like they are rushing it on for us. So the moment the person is not getting the normal
supply,
it means that there are shortage. Last week I called all the regional reps of NAPLAS, and they were all complaining the same thing. This afternoon at the conference, a lady was complaining it bitterly to me that one of the facilities in Accra, they have to pay. If you don't pay the 5 Ghana cedis, they will not give you the ART, the medicine.
Yeah.
It is very, very very pathetic. And these are the issues that we have
to... You are confronted with. Charity, yes. There are still issues, but for now, we end it with you here. We still want to explore the issue of the antiretrovirus, but I want to thank you very much for being part of it this evening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Charity Danso is with NAPLAS, a support group for HIV and AIDS, people living with HIV and AIDS. But Dr. Joseph Amuzu is the Director of Policy and Planning at the Ghana AIDS Commission. He's also on the line with us. Doc, good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
Yes. Is it a situation of the country running out of antiretrovirals, or is it just a rationing to help the people?
I don't think there is any rationing. We also got, I think a couple of weeks ago, there was this email from some of the agencies complaining that there are some shortages. Immediately, there was a reaction from the national program manager of the National AIDS Control Program, saying that there were no shortages, and he confirmed that there were drugs at the each hospital, and other regions have just collected their drugs. So that issue, I thought, has been put to rest. And today there was this big conference organized by the Society for Women in AIDS in Ghana, and the Honorable Minister himself in a speech said that this week the U.S. government has donated large quantities of ARVs to Ghana. So there are drugs in the system, and I don't think that we will rush in ARV drugs for people who need them. That is not the kind of work.
We're just following up on the situation where they used to get 4 months if they wanted to and had the money, as they say, to pay for. But now they'll be given 2 weeks stock, as she mentioned.
Well, that's, in terms of how much stock they'll be given, I am not really aware of that. That is something that the Ministry of Health people can competently talk about.
Yeah. But Doc, moving on to other issues, what are some of the achievements we've talked about so far as a national response to HIV and AIDS?
Well, we've come a long way in terms of HIV AIDS. You recall that the prevalence has consistently been decreasing, and At the moment, we are somewhere around 1.5% national adult prevalence. Awareness has been very high. Over 99% of the population, at least, they are aware of HIV/AIDS. The knowledge is comprehensive. We are not yet there. We are not very comfortable. At that point here, we think that the knowledge should be more comprehensive than it is. We have a lot of NGOs at the grassroots now undertaking HIV/AIDS activity. We have treatment in the country. Currently, about 40% or over 40% of people who need treatment are on treatment. People living with AIDS are surviving longer. Of course, we still have a lot of challenges, the stigma and the discrimination hasn't gone away. But at least the awareness has been raised, and people are aware of the preventive measures that are available. People are using it, but it's work in progress. And I think that, you know, we are dealing with human beings. It's an issue of behavior and behavior change, and that takes some time to come to the level that we would wish it should come to. So I think for now we've had a lot of success. The other thing I want to say also in terms of success is HIV has attracted a lot of funding. We've been able to mobilize a lot of resources, and the money is actually working effectively, and that is why we are seeing the reduction in the prevalence rate.
Yes. You mentioned 40%. Where are the 60?
Where are the
60 that should be on antiretrovirals?
Oh, yes. It's a challenge. Antiretroviral is a whole system. You need to get the drugs, you need to get the facilities, you need to get the health workers to be trained properly. to give counseling and to give the treatment. So it's not something that can be done overnight. Now, this is a lot of progress from days ago when we didn't even have the treatment. So definitely the aim is to get to a point that we can have everybody on treatment. But I can assure you that is quite an enormous challenge in terms of the resources that will be required.
Okay.
But that is what we are doing. That is our aim.
Okay.
So we will definitely get there, but it is a process, and we have to gradually go through that process.
Doc, in about 30 seconds, have we adequately targeted women in the response?
Yes. We now have a new strategic plan for 2011-2015, and that plan has adequate provisions for women. Women have peculiar challenges, as you are aware. And so what we want to do in this strategic plan to make sure that all our interventions have gender mainstreaming activities or gender mainstreaming, all our activities are gender mainstream. We want to be building capacity of all our stakeholders who are into HIV/AIDS to consider the issue of gender, particularly the issue of women. And we will be reviewing our HIV policy itself and make sure that we are very gender sensitive. So those are the things that we are targeting. But there are broader things for women that society must do. Generally, the recognition of women is quite important. That's an issue for society. We need to make sure that women are empowered economically. We need to encourage girls to go to school, be in education for long hours. Women must have access to credit. They need training. We need more leadership.
So it means all the issues we speak about, women's empowerment, will come in if we are going to tackle this HIV concerns very well.
Definitely, yeah, definitely, okay. Definitely. Because we know that women are traditionally disadvantaged in our country and in Africa in general.
Dr. Joseph Amuzu.
Empowerment of women is key in HIV prevention.
Dr. Joseph Amuzu, we want to thank you very much for your time on the show this evening.
Okay.
As the Director of Policy and Planning of the Ghana AIDS Commission. And before we go, we have some of your tests here. The mining companies should give their departed souls some respect and stop destroying their grave. Francis Bananka and Baba Musa, it is time for mining companies in Ghana to begin to respect the people in these mining areas. And Champon Benjamin, what is happening in the Volta region is a symptom of the ill performance of the NDC, and this will soon be extended to other regions. They will surely be voted out of power in 2012. Well, we promise you that story, but we've not been able to, but we promise that certainly, God willing, tomorrow we shall take a look at it. And Konab James Tamale, the appropriate authority should step in this mining case before it is politicized. And Emmanuel from Wasel Kropon is saying, oh Ghana, where are we heading to? How come that the drugs for the HIV patients, people living with HIV, we call them, are running out in the country? What is the government doing about this? You are posting, you've just heard something. Newmont cannot always have their way by making business at the expense of the vulnerable. Newmont is always talking about compensation. They must leave the villages alone. Ofosua from Accra sent in that one. And Kojoe King, Cape Coast, people of Volta must be careful not to sell their political birthright to their long-term political opponents. NDC, it's your party. And we need government intervention in connection with the illegal mining in our communities in order to stop unlawful flooding. And the good people of Volta region must be patient with President Mills so that he can deliver their share of the Better Ghana Agenda development to them appropriately. And the Voltairians dialed the wrong number during 2008 elections, Sham is saying. And Alaji Mama, the NDC should let sanity prevail within their ranks in the Volta region. And for the rest, I want to thank you all for sending in, but certainly we'll be touching on this story tomorrow, God willing. We want to thank so much Hanosu Bempao Sat at the controls, and Najak Ble Ago and Vic Ahaji, our production assistant, but our production team, Christopher Sidu, Edmund Tete, and Bright Agama. My name is Kinsley of Interest.